welcome to Conversations in Cannabis. Today's guest is Dennis Hunter from California-based Cannacraft. This conversation was recorded over the phone November 11th, 2022.
Oh my God, I've been up at the farm last few weeks. We kind of got a little bit of a cold spell about 2-3 weeks ago, and it just kind of turned everything nice purple hue to it. But it's been pretty dry and a pretty a mellow fall. So the crops is, I think it's best one that we've had, and all the flower that's coming down and that we're processing right now just looks phenomenal. So we're really excited about, and we're growing probably 35, 40 different strains. And so there's just a lot of variety. So we're really excited to get it into the jars and Farmer and the Felon. And we just went down to the tasting down in San Diego with a bunch of bud tenders, and so just everybody was really stoked with the quality that's coming down there.
Nice. Well, when you're considering what varietals that you actually do want to bring to market, kind of what's the R&D process behind your genetics decisions?
We just have like a good group of people that are always trying new things and sharing strains with each other, and growers that we know that, and breeders that are coming out with new flavors and stuff. So it kind of comes from all over the place. And a lot of them, we're trying this year, and so some of them are smaller batches of things that we're trying out and checking out. And so, and some of them are just so great that we'll definitely be doing more of them next year. But so it's not just like one set way of doing it. We really get stuff from all over.
Well, and you definitely have your eye to the ground in the largest adult use cannabis market in the world. Obviously, California have been doing it since Proposition 215 days. You yourself, have a long legacy in this industry. I kind of want to take it a little bit back to kind of your beginning origins with the plant, right? So, I mean, you're one of the longest running legacy operators that is now in the legal market in California. What was your original kind of relationship with the plant, so to speak?
Yeah, I started cultivating when I was 16 years old, and so me and a friend we kind of had a little secret garden that we had down in this little creek area. And so we would, cut class and go take care of the plants. And so it was just a fun little venture, with a friend. And I just got addicted, right out of the gate, just with the plant and, learning more about it and what it needed. And so it's just been a really great relationship with the plant all along. And, I got introduced to just a lot of, really amazing growers early on up in like Mendocino County and the Emerald Triangle and up Spyrock. So right out of the gate, I really, at a young age, got to learn from some of the best growers out there.
Well, and you obviously famously, got busted. I believe it was in 1998. Which kind of, I, if I'm not mistaken, gave rise to the name, the Farmer and the Felon, brand. When you first, kind of got out, of prison, kind of what was, the understanding of your relationship with the plant at that point? Were you like, I'm done. I've been, did you have like a kind of a self wrestling, or you were like, this is the industry that I have to be a part of?
Yeah. I kind of got out with a bit of a chip on my shoulder. I didn't really feel like I should be going to prison and being away from my kids and my family, 6.5 years of my life. So I came out with a chip on my shoulder and I started a hydroponic company selling supplies to cultivators, because I was a cultivator. I knew what they needed, knew what they wanted. And so I just stayed on the fringes a little bit around the industry and, kept my pulse on what was going on and things like that. And then it was literally probably the couple days after I got off probation is when we started Cannacraft, where I could actually touch the plant again legally and semi-legally and stuff. So definitely never got too far away from it. And it's been just the center of my life pretty much since I was a teenager.
Well, and when you had the hydroponic shop, that kind of helped you introduce to the person that would eventually help you make Canna Craft. When you first met that partner, like, what was the understanding? Because again, building a company, especially in California, is not easy. Having the right partnership and making sure that you have the right person, you know, to make this happen isn't easy. Kind of what was that relationship and that meeting kind of like?
Yeah, I was a distributor, so I was making products and selling them to hydroponic stores. And so when Ned came along, he was buying so much supplies that he was really looking for a better deal than going to the retail store. And he came in and he probably bought more than most of the largest shops that I was selling to. And so I met him and we hit it off. He actually had a grow up on a property that I lived at when I was on the run. And so we just kind of hit it off and just kept talking about, you know, the gardens that he's had and things like that. And so it just kind of led itself to, you know, his ambitions and my ambitions of ready to really start something in the cannabis space as soon as I got off probation. And we just aligned and bought our first extractor and, you know, off to the races.
And one of the things, you know, that a lot of people are starting to understand now is the alternative cannabinoid space, things like CBD, CBG, CBN. You were kind of one of the first people to start playing around with CBD as the first alternative cannabinoid to really hit the market. When you were really kind of building that side of your business, what was your understanding of CBD and kind of how did you educate yourself on, say, lesser cannabinoids?
Yeah, you know, I was really fortunate that early on when we were starting the business, we had Martin Lee, who's founder of Project CBD. And so he was just this wealth of knowledge before anybody was even looking at CBD. He was writing on it and doing papers and looking at all the benefits of this other cannabinoid. And so having him right there with us, even helping us formulate some of the products and Care by Design. So he was giving us seeds and stuff from the CBD plants. And at the time it was just people just didn't know what we were even talking about. And so it was funny. We were preaching it. And then all of a sudden the big CBD wave hits, you know, years later. And so that's really where we, you know, learned a lot about the benefits and of the other cannabinoids, which also, you know, recently over the last few years, really getting into CBG and CBN and all these other minor cannabinoids and seeing what, you know, THCV, I think probably 5 years ago, we were growing THCV and trying to separate THCV from THC when it was in an oil form and stuff like that. So, and just looking at how different some of these cannabinoids are. And I think, you know, over the next decade, we're going to just keep learning more and more about what benefits that they have.
Well, and especially as more and more states come online, obviously, recently, you know, Missouri and Maryland came online. As far as legalization is concerned, they don't have their adult use setups done yet, but, you know, they're greenlit to go. Do you see more education kind of rolling out along the consumer mindset? Because again, most consumers in most markets are still THC driven. Obviously, California has a larger connoisseur market. Are you seeing kind of the proliferation, so to speak, of education on the consumer market kind of rise across the board? Or are you still kind of seeing a little bit of slowness to understanding what some of these minor cannabinoids can help with?
Yeah, I mean, I think it's still a little bit slow when you look at the whole market. But I do see that, you know, with legalization, I think if we get a change in federal law as well, you'll see a lot more universities and a lot of the higher education kind of looking at these. And right now, I was just looking the other day, and you know, California has got some grants that they're giving out to some of the universities and stuff to do some of this study. So I think with federal movement, we'll get some of the federal money that will help really get people looking at it from that standpoint.
Well, and as far as federal legalization is concerned, obviously Joe Biden famously recently said, "Hey, I'm going to deschedule everything. I'm going to pardon all possession cases on the federal level." Do you see this as kind of a domino effect towards that legalization movement, or do you think that because obviously he hasn't descheduled it yet, so do you think this was more posturing, or do you think that this is actually a windfall and it's finally going to happen?
Yeah, I mean, I think there's a little posturing there going on. I would, you know, we'd love to see it happen. I mean, the 280E just really hinders every cannabis company. It's how can you even operate a business where you can't write off your expenses, you know, other than cost of goods. So it's definitely to have a real cannabis market that's sustainable. We really need some of those changes to be made at the federal level. You know, for simple possession, there's not a lot of people in federal prison for simple possession. So I don't know. It's going to have a huge, huge effect right there, but it's the right messaging. It's the right direction. So I think, you know, hopefully it's not just a posturing and then nothing happens. So hopefully he backs it up with some action.
Well, and you mentioned 280E famously, that's been a bane in the existence of the even the earliest medical market in California. Mm-hmm. You know, we've had some attempts at trying some banking reform, obviously the Safe Banking Act. I don't know how many times at this point that's passed one house of Congress and hasn't made it through the other. Do you see the Safe Banking Act or some type of you know, bank reform or 280E kind of resolution coming to fruition for kind of legalized markets before, say, a federal legalization movement happens? Or, you know, is that going to be all kind of wound up into one big ball?
Yeah, it's hard to tell. I keep thinking we're moving in that direction, but it seems like year after year, it just keeps getting pushed out. And I don't know if it would be nice, even if they did take the smaller step and just get it out of the Controlled Substance Act. And even if they don't have it all figured out, just getting, safe banking or something like that, at least it would help some of these regulated markets be able to compete and actually run real businesses. So,
well, and especially the businesses that are operating, you know, correctly. And, you know, CannaCraft is obviously one of the premier businesses in California that's operating correctly. I mean, you guys have some of the most prestigious brands kind of under your flagship. You got what, Farmer and Felon, one of my favorites, ABX. I know you guys had redesigned Laguna's Hi-Fi Hops. I believe it's now Sessions. You know, so like you guys got some amazing brands under your flagship. When you're kind of figuring out the market as a whole and you're saying, okay, well, you know, flower obviously is always going to be king. There's kind of a rise now in extracts, edibles, and pre-rolls have kind of taken a lift. There's been a shift from, say, macrodosing to microdosing, especially in edibles. As kind of an operator, when you're taking a look at the totality of where to kind of place your pieces on the puzzle, what do you take into consideration and what are you kind of seeing from your perspective?
Yeah, you know, really where our attention is really on the quality of the products. We've really taken a much harder look at really preserving those terpenes. It's really the magic in all the sauces is the terpenes in all these varieties and what those profiles do and what the effects are and stuff. So where we're really double downing right now is in all the way from cultivation to being on the store shelf is trying to preserve those terpenes all the way through the process. That means, you know, revamping all of our processing, like drying spaces and making sure the temperature's right in the field, just how we're farming, making sure that we're preserving terpenes all the way through and then all the way into extract. The way that we're extracting is preserving it all the way through that process and into the products. Right now we just launched these new sauce carts with ABX. And you're just so good. We're super excited. We're just down at a tasting in San Diego where we were kind of introducing them. And so just really stoked on some of the new products and kind of with that, you know, with that commitment to the terpenes.
You kind of arise an interesting point as part of the entourage effect. And, you know, we talked about lesser cannabinoids earlier, but one thing that's kind of, you know, taken the forefront in the cannabis connoisseur's mind is obviously the terp profile as part of the entourage effect. When you guys are kind of looking at terpenes and the preservation of terpenes, that's still, you know, as much of an art as it is a science. How are you guys making sure kind of that process keeps that clarity of the plant all the way to the end consumer?
Yeah, we're doing a lot of fresh frozen in the field. So freezing, you know, the plant, and it's a natural state, and trying to hold it there, and then going right into extracting at negative 80 degree temperatures. And so we're not pulling any of the waxes or chlorophyll or anything along with it. We're really just getting those pristine terpenes profiles coming right through, sometimes separating those at that point, and so that we can preserve them in some of the post-processing processes as well when we're formulating.
Nice. Well, and as a personal connoisseur, do you have a particular terp profile that you prefer?
You know, it might sound cliche, but I still love Blue Dream. It's one of my favorite ones. And I smoke, I just love the effect. So I always go back to that one.
Nice. And now that you, you know, we're kind of looking at the fall harvest, you talked about some of the products you're introducing. Very excited about the cart by ABX, the sauce carts. What in particular can we look towards at the Emerald Cup? Because I believe that you guys are kind of prominent in the Emerald Cup. You're based in Santa Rosa. What can we look forward to from Canna Craft and Farmer and the Felon and your other brands? God, I think all of your brands are there.
Yeah. You know, obviously we'll be showcasing some of this fall harvest at Emerald Cup and probably, you know, handing out a lot of samples to everybody there. ABX also just, or Farmer and the Felon just had a rosin, had some rosin launch recently. It's going really well. ABX has some diamonds and sauce and in the dabbable products too. So just everything on that extract level is all being done with that kind of terp preservation methods. So a lot of good tasty products.
Well, and out of curiosity, you know, for say Lagunas Hi-Fi Sessions or Keef Brands, when you're looking at kind of the edibles market, right? And you're looking at kind of, again, that shift from macrodose edibles during the 215 days to now microdose edibles during the legal 64 days. Are you seeing that kind of shift in the consumer mindset of, hey, I want to be able to drink more and have a more specialized experience versus kind of, you know, take one and done? Or are you seeing a preservation in two different types of demographics where one does want to get that higher dose drink and one wants to get that microdose?
Yeah, I see it in both ways. It is just two groups. There's some, they're literally looking for milligrams of THC and they're to get where they want to be. They want high dose edibles. And then there's just a whole nother demographic that loves that, just a little grin on their face and a little 2 or 3 milligrams, 5 milligram microdose. And that puts them where they want to be. So it's really hard to say that it's all moving one direction because it really is moving in two.
Well, and you kind of have a totality of the market as far as, you know, being able to see data from every single aspect. When you're looking at a categorical approach, are you seeing any clear winner coming out of, say, the 2000s? Like, is there, you know, is there a category that might overtake flower in, say, the next 5 to 10 years? Or are you seeing everybody kind of every single category kind of stay static as it is?
Yeah, I think, you know, I've seen rosin, solventless extracts seem to be being a surge right now and a lot of demand for those products. So I think that would be the one I see the biggest shift in over the last year or two. Obviously, gummies and edibles and the gummy market got very popular and really took a lot of the market share there, you know, over the last 2 to 3 years. But definitely things going to, and then, you know, using solventless as a base too for some of the edibles, some of the solventless gummies and things where, you know, maybe 3 or 4 years ago, people were just trying to get gummies to taste like gummies. And now we're back to that, you know, terp profiles and now, you know, using really high terpene content extracts in those gummies so that you're actually tasting the nuances of the different strains and sometimes complementing it with the flavors of the gummies and stuff. So, and you get just a little different effect even in edibles from having those terp profiles. So that's kind of the directions I see things heading.
Well, and in California, obviously, especially in say the Los Angeles region, you now have a rise in smoke lounges and consumption lounges. Las Vegas, or should say Nevada, just did their sunset clause, and they're going to have consumption lounges. Do you see kind of edibles and say that olfactory experience of having terpenes? Do you see that kind of being paired with dishes in the future with some of these some of these places?
Absolutely. And I've seen it done in it here with some like dinners and things like that, where you're having these chefs really pair, you know, like even food dishes with these terpene profiles and stuff like that. So yeah, I could definitely see it continuing there. It's obviously it's kind of in the very beginning stages of it, but I do see it kind of like you do with wine, where you got these pairings and you're after certain flavors and effects.
And now that we are kind of looking at, again, a possibility of having maybe not federal legalization, but a descheduling on the CSA, we have a lot of other countries legalizing federally. Is there a possibility of CannaCraft going international at some point?
It's not on our radar right now. You know, just keeping up with the California market is it keeps us pretty busy. So, and this is a market that we feel is really important to pay attention to and not get ourselves spread too thin.
We got the Emerald Cup Harvest Ball coming up in about a month. Look forward to seeing what you guys are dropping there. Is there what's next for you guys? Kind of on the landscape, what do you guys got on the docket other than say the sauce pens from ABX or anything else? Is there anything we should be looking out for?
No, I think more just little revamps of and improvements along the way and stuff. So really the sauce carts are literally just launching right now, so it's definitely going to be front and center at the Harvest Ball.
We would like to thank Dennis for his time and being on today's episode. You can find out more about CannaCraft by visiting them online at www.cannacraft.com. As always, stay tuned to the next episode here on Conversations in Cannabis.